This episode is brought to you by Get Group. Learn more about secure, ISO-compliant mobile driver's licenses and sign up for a demo at getgroupna.com. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AnvaCast. I'm excited to welcome our guest today, Lorraine Martin, who is the CEO of the National Safety Council. Lorraine, welcome to your first visit with us to the AnvaCast.
Delighted to be here, Ian. Thank you so much for having me.
Lorraine, we're just going to jump right into it because that's the way we do things here on the AnvaCast. The National Safety Council is, in many ways, a household name. It's an organization that's been around for many years. Folks that are in the safety industry know it well. It's recognizable. But I'm not sure really everybody listening really knows what it is. It's one of those things people kind of know of, and there's a consciousness of it, but maybe not a full appreciation to what is the organization that is the National Safety Council. Can you start us off by giving us that kind of high-level overview?
Yeah, sure, I'd love to. So the National Safety Council, as you said, has been around for over 100 years, and it is America's leading nonprofit safety advocate. So our job is to help people make sure they live their fullest lives, make sure that something that's preventable doesn't interrupt that. And safety is the way that we make sure that we go throughout our lives, both in the workplace and any place else, at home or in our communities, and make sure that we get to the other side of whatever it is we're doing in a safe way. So we have our reach right now is not only through podcasts and partnerships like this with AMVA, but we have 16,000 member companies that enable us to reach employees, not only to help them with safety at work, but help them in safety in their whole lives. And that's about 7 million employees that are part of all of those member companies. And Ian, what we do is we really look at the data every year and we say to ourselves, you know, where are those preventable injuries and deaths happening for our American citizens and the folks that live in our country? And right now we focus on the workplace. We focus on make sure people driving safely, and we can talk more about that for sure. Mm-hmm. And then this issue that we call impairment and really making sure mm-hmm. that humans are ready to do whatever it is they might be doing, especially if it has safety implications to it, so that they're not fatigued, they're not under the influence of an altering substance, they're not perhaps distracted or otherwise dealing with mental health issues. So those really are our three primary focuses today, but they have changed over those hundreds of years. And it's basically because we look at what's really getting in our way these days.
And you focus on that word preventable a couple of times. Talk to me about, you know, what does that mean? There are leading causes of injuries and death that I guess are not preventable. So how does the National Safety Council kind of define those differences between preventable causes and ones that maybe aren't defined as a preventable cause?
Yeah, that word is really important for us and something that we spend a lot of time of using kind of as a screen for us as we look at things. So things like heart attacks and cancer, which are two of the leading causes of death in our nation. While there are things you can do to prevent them, we don't consider them things that you can do in the moment, you know, as you're navigating to ensure that something you didn't want to have happen to you doesn't happen to you. A car crash, falling from heights, an overdose on a drug that you're taking for reasons other than to end your life. And mm-hmm. so those for us are things that we can have proactive actions, do things about, educate, have legislation, have enforcements that enable humans to not have that thing occur for them so that they can, quote, as we say, live their fullest lives, whatever that was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So it is really important. We really do try to focus on those things where your behavior, your actions very clearly can ensure you that something that you don't want to have happen to you doesn't happen to you.
And the companies you work with, where you talk about the workplace safety, across all types of industries, or is there some industries that tend to have a focus of where this preventable death and injury is connected to the workplace?
Yeah, those 16,000 roughly members, they're from all industries. Industries that could be very high safety conscious, as you just said, like construction and forestry and heavy manufacturing, to office workers, to folks that are in the gig economy or are working on you know, various kinds of intelligence applications. It's all walks of industry, because there are safety related activities that have to be put in place for your workers, no matter what kind of environment they're in. Clearly, things like construction and forestry are often, for us, are the, you know, top of the list where we do see incidents, where we do see fatalities, unfortunately. And we have something called injury facts that is updated on our website regularly, that shows you what industries are having challenges and what challenges are they having regarding safety incidents. And then hopefully, what can we go do about that? So it really is across the board.
And so I guess the place where our partnership really intersects, you've referred to it a couple times, is the transportation safety, road safety more specifically. So let's talk about, there's two things I particularly want to ask you about as it relates to NSC. And I think I'll go with more the traditional role of NSC, if you will, which is, how do you work with your members and talk about road safety and driving safety in that environment of the workplace?
Yeah, thank you for asking about that. I'll start with the bigger picture. And we lose, as I'm sure Amva and all of the folks on this podcast know, somewhere around 40,000 people to what I would call preventable roadway fatalities every year. And every one of those is something we could have done something about and have prevented somebody from not living their full lives. And the intersection of that with workplace is, it is still year over year the leading cause of workplace fatalities. And you might not think that, but people do drive. They get into equipment, whether it's forklifts or the van to take them to their oil and gas related remediation, or working on the side of a highway. It is still the leading cause of workplace fatalities. So it's really important for us to bring all the learnings we've had of how to drive safely, no matter why you're driving, and bring that to educate employers so that they can play a role in helping their employees do it safely while they're doing it for their work. And the great silver lining to all that is, when you learn how to drive safely, defensively, to do the things that you know keep you safe, you bring that home with you when you're driving for other reasons as well, in your communities, for your daily life, off, we say, on the job and off the job. So it's so important that employers play an active role here. And they can do that in a variety of ways, through training programs, through educating about how to ensure that you don't drive distracted, whether you're driving for work or otherwise, you know, put the cell phone down. Many companies have cell phone bans that say, if you're driving for me, you can't use that cell phone. Mm-hmm. And I want you to sign, I do that. All of my employees sign a pledge that they won't drive distracted and use their cell phone. I had to do the same when I joined the organization. And employers, they can do that not only, again, for the time that they're with you, but to help you bring it home and to bring it to your family and to really get to that goal of what we need and should have, is that driving a car, being on our roadways, should not cause you to have to put your life at risk.
Absolutely. Do you find, when working with employers, I'm curious, when you talk about the deaths that happen on the job, I'd imagine, or I don't know, I'll ask the question, is there a difference between the challenges where someone is driving because they're doing it for their employer versus the idea that they are a professional driver and that is their job for the employer?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And certainly if you are in the trucking industry, you are driver of the truck, that is your profession. And special attention must be paid to making sure you can do that well, because that is your occupation, and you do that safely. And the trucking industry has been, you know, a great partner of many of us to make sure that we know what that is, and to ensure that we are having safe truck drivers. There are others who are driving on behalf of doing their work, and they wouldn't consider themselves a truck, vehicle operator.
Job.
Right. Yeah. You're driving to go fix the electrical pole that came down in the storm last week, or the hurricane, you know. Yeah, you are driving on behalf of your company, and you need to do that safely for you and for the others on the road. But when you get there, you know, you're taking out your tool belt and doing your day job. So that you have to even pay more attention in some cases there, because you trick yourself that what you are is the electrician or the, you know, the mechanic. But truthfully, when you're driving that car, you're also the professional driver, and you have to be able to do it safely, and you have to do it for yourself and for others on the road.
Yeah, so I'd imagine for some organizations or some employees and employers, that's where the extra challenge is. It's a natural conversation when your job is to be a driver, as opposed to where you're driving as a means to the end and have to embrace that now as part of the process, as opposed to just a necessary part of the process.
Yeah, and we provide tools to employers for just that purpose. In fact, all of my employees take distracted driving training. I think it's every other year. And we've been able to leverage the work that we've done for state and local governments on how to be a defensive driver. Defensive driver is one that's going to look out for everything else around them, but also drive extremely safely. And use that same training that we've done for governments and organizations like the folks that we have on the podcast here today, mm-hmm. and bring that to employers and say, here's a same set of material, same set of learning, same set of behavior awareness that you can provide to your employees, just like we do for folks who unfortunately had a ticket or had some other mm-hmm. kind of reason for us to say, you need a little bit more before you get back out on the road. And we have that material for workplaces as well. And as I said, my employees all take it. They don't necessarily do a lot of driving to do our job, but you know, we know what it means to be a safe driver, and it's something that I can offer to my employees and their families to make sure that they have the benefit of that training.
So you mentioned that you've worked with a number of state governments, and I know a number of our AMVA members use the NSC Defensive Driving Program, but I'm sure there are many that aren't or may not know about it. Can you say a little bit more? I know that it provides training perhaps for government employees, but you have a number of states that are using it as part of the programs they provide either as options or sometimes obligations for their citizens that are driving. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that program works?
I sure can. And it has become even, you know, a little bit more challenging in this whole pandemic world. But this is a set of material training programs that we've had for decades, actually. We actually pioneered some of the early defensive driving training that has been used, as you said, for kind of remediation purposes initially, to help people make sure that they're driving safely when we've determined that perhaps they hadn't. And there are 19 DMVs across our country that are using our services for a variety of reasons. In some cases, as you said, for proactiveness, some cases for court-related activities, in other cases, suspended licenses, a variety of things to help folks get back on the road and get back on the road safely. AMVA members know that drivers with violations are more likely to be involved in future crashes, and some 20% of traffic fatalities involve not only potentially an unlicensed driver, but somebody who might have been suspended and hasn't taken care of that. So having some programs, you know, that have been proven literally for decades, and I don't know how many, but it's millions of drivers have been through our programs, and we refine them every year to ensure that we're still getting the right kind of behavioral training modules out there. We have shown time and time again that they truly have enabled those states and those jurisdictions to have safer drivers. In Massachusetts, I'll just give you one example. In the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, registrants of their driver retraining program grew 30% over the last year, and registrations for addressing their suspension go up 52%. And some of that has to do, I think, with some of the COVID-related situation that we're in right now. We took all of our training that we could to an online version. I know a lot of your AMVA members like the classroom training that is a high impact for classroom training, but we just couldn't do that anymore. We had to address both the students and the instructor. So it went online, and magically, a lot of folks that perhaps had suspended licenses, or perhaps, you know, somehow the classroom just wasn't their thing, have been able to get online and do some of that. And we've had a little bit of an uptick, which has been one kind of a surprise, but really great that we've been able to reach some folks that we wouldn't have reached otherwise.
So it's interesting, this idea of these unanticipated safety impacts of the pandemic. What else have you seen in that area? That really fascinates me that, you know, there are, as challenging as these times have been and continue to be, there have been some unanticipated benefits, for lack of a better word, as well as some new challenges that have come up. So what have you seen on the safety front in that area?
You know, thank you for asking about that too, Ian. We have just put out, the updated data for the first 6 months of this year. And we track month over month every year, where are the fatalities and injuries on our roadways? And, you know, what's the death rate? And what's the pure number? It's a horrible thing to look at, but if we don't know what's going on, we can't do something about it. And in the first 6 months of 2020, we have had 17% less miles driven and 20% higher fatality rate. So every mile driven has been a more deadly mile driven in our country. And it's not every state. We just have put out a report that shows you which states went what direction. Some have done much better during this time when people got off the roads, and some are just startlingly more deadly. And the thing that we're seeing, and we're still looking at all the causation, and we'll be looking at that data with NHTSA and CDC and everyone else who combs through this kind of information. But it does look like we've forgotten what safe driving is. We are speeding. We are distracted, which I totally understand because the world has just turned upside down for many of us. We're distracted with devices, and we're not wearing seatbelts. There's some data that shows from NHTSA that more ejections are occurring. And so we just have to look at all of that and eventually get to the truth and really understand number by number what did we lose track of here during this time frame, and why is it that we're driving more risky and that our roadways have become more deadly, and do something about it. And that is our call to arms to everyone across our country who can, have a voice here, is to remind folks of what safe driving is. And we know from our Road to Zero activity that AMVA is a great partner on, and another, 1,500 organizations have banded together to say, we want zero deaths on our roadways. We know that there are three things that help us do that. And the first one is doubling down on what works. And that's driving with all of the precautions we know that enable us to be safe, and that's legislation and enforcement. And the second one is advancing promising technology. And we know that's going to help, but that doesn't help overnight. That's stuff that we get in cars and in infrastructure. And finally, just having a safety culture, making sure that we're not being complacent about our roads and making sure we're engineering where we can to help make sure that they're as safe as they can be. So those three things, doubling down on what works, advancing promising technologies, and creating safety culture that prioritize safety, we know that is the roadmap to getting to zero deaths. But right now during this pandemic, it does feel like we forgot what safe driving looks like, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I appreciate you, bringing up the Road to Zero efforts and those priorities. And a conversation we've had with some other guests on this podcast around this, the idea of safety culture. And it's interesting that you talk about the statistics during the pandemic, because in many ways, we're seeing that the attitudes around safety being played out in many different realms of society right now, not just on how you drive. And this balance in society between taking safety precautions, balancing with individual liberties and what is my choice and what isn't my choice, is the same exact thing we've been battling in the transportation safety field for years. And now we're seeing it play out in public health in this pandemic.
Yeah, that connection is really important, and for something for us to really continue to look at. Another statistic came out this week that people are more willing to wear a mask, and we know all of the complications of that, and you just kind of hinted at that, than they are to put their phone down and not drive distracted in a car. Huh. So yes, we all are more focused on safety right now. And in fact, safety and working safely is what's going to allow our country, our world, to get back on its feet. And so this visceral understanding that humans being able to do what they love to do, whether that's work or pleasure, and do that without unduly putting themselves at harm, in this case, a health safety dynamic with the pandemic, is on everybody's mind. And it now, guides every moment of our day. Seatbelts and face masks are PPE that, a lot of people in the workplace have dealt with for forever. We're understanding some of these added, protections for the health crisis. We can't forget that we understood that seatbelts were the protection mechanism required to be in a car. And if you did get into a crash, to survive that crash. And And I don't know if we've just distracted ourselves and now we, you know, there's only so much safety we can concern ourselves with. The other dynamic that is starting to be kind of itched out a little bit is that as we all, you know, sought to protect ourselves from the health crisis, many of us stayed in our homes and didn't drive. And that's why a lot of the miles driven have gone down. Sure. At the same time, the folks that maybe felt more comfortable to be out in the world may have had a higher risk factor to begin with.
Sure, they're the risk takers anyway,
perhaps. And, you know, we don't want to jump to conclusions. We've got to look at the data. It takes time to do that, but it does.
You're nicer than I am, Lorraine. I appreciate that.
it does feel like there's probably a nugget there that those folks felt more comfortable and they may have a higher, you know, kind of risk tolerance to begin with.
Hmm. And I just want to go back to that stat that you mentioned, that the new piece of data you came out. I want to make sure I, and I'm sure all the listeners, you know, heard you correctly, which is that folks are more likely to wear a face mask, a face covering right now, than they are to put down the phone while they drive.
They say that they'd be more willing to do that right now. Absolutely. And maybe some of that is that the masks are temporary and the phone is something that they know they want forever. I don't know. We have to understand some of the psychology to all of that. But this issue of distracted driving, and I'm glad you brought it back to us, is so important. It is distracted. October's Distracted Driving Awareness Month this year because it was supposed to be April. And we, with our partners in the government, we moved it here to the October timeframe. So it's the Just Drive pledge that we have right now that says for both employers and others to just, you know, take that pledge and tell yourself, when I get in a car, all I'm going to do is pay attention to driving. I'm not going to be on the phone, on the app, on my monitor, any of that. And you know, it's just so important for us to remind everyone that we understand how much distracted driving is playing a role. That's not just the handheld device, which you just referred to with the cell phones, but it's also this issue of impairment. And we're starting to see, you know, more than anecdotal data that the crashes have increased with substance and multi-substance use, whether it's alcohol, cannabis. And we also know, unfortunately, that 40 states in our nation right now have a higher opioid overdose than this time last year. And we were making such great progress, you know, 18 to 19. Now in 2020, we're headed back in the other direction. So people are, you know, impaired for whatever reason, and some of them are driving, and we need to remind ourselves that that is distracted driving, that is impaired driving, and that means you're not at your best, and we're going to see, you know, the ramifications of that. So I don't really know what's going on in all of our, you know, psychological thinkings of all of this, but the world is upside down. Nobody's able to do what they chose to do with their life day to day, moment to moment, the way they chose to do it in the past because of what's occurred. And so we just need to remind ourselves that our roadways are a place where we have to do it and do it safely. And when you get behind the wheel, you got all these other distractions, all these other commitments and pressures that perhaps didn't exist before, to remind yourself to just drive. And that's hard to do. That's hard to do on a normal day. And it's certainly, you know, more challenging to do when we have all of these increased pressures on us and complexities, but it's so important. And the data tells us, you know, we can't talk about this more enough. And I ask all of the AMVA members that are on the line here, and for those of that you touch, to use October as Distracted Driving Awareness Month and see if there's anything that that you can pick up on and help your constituents, you know, stay alive when they go from point to point.
Absolutely. Well, I know we're almost starting to run out of time, but before I let you go, Lorraine, we always like to learn a little bit about who we're talking to and their background. You've been with NSC now, if I remember correctly, a little bit over a year now?
June of a year ago, so just a bit more.
Yeah. But your entrance to the safety world is not a huge shift with your career in the aviation industry, for I think lack of a better phrase. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say more aerospace and defense, but airplanes towards the end.
Towards the end, yeah. And so in that world, though, what have you seen translated in terms of the the nature of the safety conversation in aerospace and defense and the culture of talking about safety, have you seen similarities or differences in that world versus, say, the surface transportation world of our highways?
Yeah, thank you. So as you said, I did come from the aerospace and defense industry. I was 35 years there and started my career in the U.S. Air Force as an officer. So had very early on the understanding that I was doing things to keep other people safe, whether it was, you know, sending men and women in the services or our allies into high risk areas so they could do what we needed them to do and come home safely, or whether it was, you know, the people who were building those products, whether they were aircraft or otherwise, and ensuring that they could do that in a manufacturing and high, in many cases, high safety sensitive operations, whether it was dealing with fuel or operating from heights, or our test pilots who got up and flew the aircraft for the first time it ever, you know, had its wheels leave the ground. So, you know, really had a sensitivity to ensuring that everything was done such that people came home safely, whether it was the armed services men and women who we were supporting or our employees. That translates, I think, very well to the overall safety environment. I had a mantra when I was going through my career of every commitment every day, and that means the commitments to yourself, that means the commitments to those that you serve, and it means the commitment that they get to live their full life. They go home in as good a condition as they came to work in the morning, and perhaps better if you're helping to invest in their mental health and in their overall satisfaction in life. So I was really proud to help serve. I've always felt, you know, service was why I woke up in the morning and why I went to my job. And in NSC, that's all this is about, is getting out the information and resources and tools, training, as you and I talked about in the driving world, so that people can do what they love to do in their lives and what they love to do with their careers and do it safely. So I'm just honored to be here and to talk to your team here today. And hopefully there's something we've shared that will help them with their journey and in their mission of having safe roadways.
Absolutely. Maybe you could just tell the listeners real quick where they can find more information about the National Safety Council.
It's really nsc.org. All of our resources are there for driving training, any of the resources on being a member, if you'd like to be a member and you're not, and also our Road to Zero coalition and those resources. Mm-hmm. So nsc.org, and then just explore from there.
Well, Lorraine, I have to, on a personal note, it's been such a wonderful experience working with you and your entire team on the Road to Zero coalition. I'm sorry that lately we can't do it in person more often the way we would want to, but I think not doing it in person is perhaps the best thing we could do in the spirit of safety right now.
Absolutely. And we'll see each other soon, I have no doubt. And until then, we'll meet in Zoom and on podcasts.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again for joining us today. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in for this episode. I want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we will see you next time on the AmbiCast, everybody. Stay well.
Thank you for joining us for AmbiCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode has been brought to you by Get Group. Visit us at ambicast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.